This is a Suno India production, and you're listening to the Suno India Show.
The small businesses in our country have been hit the hardest by the coronavirus pandemic. What began with the nationwide lockdown to curtail the spread of coronavirus, the micro, small and medium enterprises, commonly known as MSMEs, continue to face severe stress since March of this year. The reverse migration of millions of people who are at the core of the sector was an added blow to an already struggling sector. Disruption in imports, existential crisis due to the revenue dip, and market competitiveness among the big businesses are all challenges plaguing the sector. The International Labour Organization had also estimated that the COVID-19 health crisis and the associated measures of confinement will have devastating consequences for micro and small businesses operations and will disrupt many existing value chains. This in turn will lead to loss of income and sharp increases in employment. The Government of India announced a special economic package of Rs. 20 lakh crores, which heavily focuses on Atmanirbhar India or a self-reliant India. As a part of this package, a 3 lakh crore collateral-free loans for businesses including MSMEs was offered. So far, under this scheme, banks have sanctioned loans totaling Rs. 1.6 lakh crore to MSMEs. Disbursement stood at around Rs. 113 lakh crore in early September 2020. Hi, I'm Kunika Balhotra, Research and Communications Officer for Suno India and your host for this episode of Indian Economy Explained of the Suno India Show. In today's episode, we will dive deeper into understanding the role of MSMEs and how the pandemic has impacted the sector. Our guest today is Amit Basole, Associate Professor of Economics at Azim Premji University in Bangalore. He is also the head of Central Research Center at Center for Sustainable Employment in the university. Welcome to the show, Mr. Amit.
How is a company qualified to become MSME in India? How big is their contribution in India's current GDP?
So the definitions of MSMEs, as far as the official things are concerned, actually were recently revised. So, of course, first of all, I think most people would know that MSME means micro, small, medium enterprises. And as you will see very shortly when I say a little bit more about this sector, these are actually very different kinds of enterprises that we put into one category. So, according to me, it's actually not a very good idea to club them together. We can talk about that. But just to answer your question on the definitions, the definitions have recently been revised. Right now, to be qualified as a micro, which is the smallest kind of firm, you have to have investments that are less than 1 crore rupees or a turnover less than 5 crores. So 1 crore, 5 crore investment turnover is sort of the threshold below which you are called a micro enterprise. And then that gets increased to 10 crores and 50 crores. Respectively, so 10 crores investment and 50 crores turnover for the small category. So you have to be less than that to be categorized as small. If you are more than that, then you come into the medium category. The upper limit is 20 crores of investment and 100 crores of turnover. So below that would be medium. Now, if you go above that, then you are outside the MSME category altogether. So you can look at the MSME category in total as investments less than 20 crore and turnover less than 100 crore. Within that, there are all these micro, small and so on. To come to the second part of your question, see, the estimated strength that we have, the latest data is from 2015. Okay, that's where most of the quoted data comes from. That's the NSSO survey that was carried out in 2015. So now it's a little out of date, but as of then, there were little over 63 million. So 6.3 crores or 63 million. Enterprises in this sector, most of which, like the vast majority, about 62 million of those, like 98% of those would be in the micro category. Okay, so the micro part of the MSME is the biggest by far category. The small and medium are actually only about 2% of the total firms. Okay, of course, when it comes to contribution to economy, naturally the small and medium have a larger contribution. right? So if you look at the total value added estimates, total value added by this sector, that would be something like, let's say, 11, 12 lakh crore rupees. This will again be 2015 data. The share of the micro enterprises in this would be less, but their share in employment would be high. So, you know, that it's like that. The micro accounts for most of the workers. So the sector in total employs something like 110 million people, I think. 110, 115 million people work in this sector. But out of that, almost 100 million or so would be in the micro segment. And only very few would be in the small and medium segments.
Earlier, you mentioned that it is not a good idea to put different kinds of enterprises in one category. Could you tell our listeners a bit more about why do you think so?
The MSME, I think, is not a very good policy category, because what happens is that it clubs together very different kinds of enterprises in one basket, so that if you provide any kind of help to MSMEs as such, right? So for example, if you look at the ECLGS, the Emergency Credit Loan Guarantee Scheme under Atmanirbhar Bharat, which was the big help that came to MSMEs, maybe later we'll come to that also. There also, if you see, the limit is so high to qualify for that help that most of the bigger end of the spectrum are the players who benefit from these schemes, right? From most of these schemes. The smaller ones, the micro ones, are too small to make use of many of the government schemes, either because they are informal, so they are not registered, they don't have bank accounts, they don't have a credit history in the banking system, and that's the vast majority of enterprises again. So unless we make policies that are targeted towards the informal end and the micro end, right, unless we do that, our MSME policies as a whole will continue to be biased towards the larger players of that spectrum. And the same is true even with the revision. In fact, with the revision, we have gone further up. So even bigger things have now come under the MSME umbrella, which is okay if you are going to keep a targeted help for the micro little guys. Right? It's okay to help the middle guys, and the small and medium enterprises also need help. So that's not a problem. But if you make them all into one category, then most of the help is going to go to the small and medium, and hardly anything is going to come to the micro.
Yes, that is a very valid point you have explained to us. So now, if we look at the present, because of the COVID-19 lockdown, most of the MSMEs have been impacted badly and are on the brink of closing their businesses. To provide relief to this sector, Indian government had announced Atmanirbhar package and other financial measures, which had allotted rupees 3 lakh crore collateral-free automatic loans for MSMEs. What do you think about these central government measures, and how has it been taken up by the entrepreneurs?
So here, you know, we can get into the package itself and its uptake. As you know, it was recently just extended by a month. It was due to expire, and now it has been extended till the end of November. Before we get into the detail of the package, though, I want to emphasize that this is basically a liquidity help, right? So what you're doing is you are enabling easier credit to the MSME sector, you know, allowing people to borrow up to a certain limit of their outstanding loans, free of collateral, repayment of principal can be deferred for a bit, you know, all of these kinds of things. So you're helping people secure some liquidity at reasonable rates and making it easier for them to function, or at least not go out of business at the time when there is, you know, economic activity is completely stopped. This is a lockdown, April, May. Now economic activity is resumed, but still we are not yet up to the you know, full extent of recovery. So the idea is that if you are otherwise in good shape, right, you have a working business model, you have a viable business. Only problem is that suddenly you're cash crunched, your you know, cash flow is cut off. So you can borrow and tide over this time and survive. That is the logic here, which can work for many firms. Okay, but again, the problem comes at the lower end of the spectrum among the micro enterprises, which we are now talking about firms that have, let's say, you know, annual earnings of 10 lakhs, 20 lakhs, 50 lakhs, you know, well under 1 crore annual earnings, and they may employ, let's say, 5 people, you know, maybe even 2-3 people, really, really small firms, which are very large number. For them, this kind of a scheme doesn't actually help much for 2 reasons. One, as I mentioned earlier, they are out of the formal credit net. So many of them don't even have that relationship with SBI or HDFC or any other bank where they can say, look, we have this credit history with you. We have these outstanding loans. Can you give us some more loans for now? They don't have that history. So they are shut out of the formal banking system. That's one reason. The other is that they are really severely cash crunched. They really survive basically hand to mouth in the business. So that if you stop the earnings of the business for 1 month or 2 months, then immediately there is no way for them to keep going at all. Right? So they cannot avail of this credit because they are out of funds. They are out of the formal system. And they have no buffer savings at all. That is the other way that most firms survive. Right? Even if you don't borrow, you have some buffer cash. You have some reserves to see yourself through. Most of these have no cash reserves. So if I cut off their income for, let's say, 1 month or 2 months, then immediately there's a crisis in the firm and it may have to shut down. That problem is not solved by the ECLGS type of policy intervention. You need a different kind of policy intervention for that. But also on ECLGS is that what you see is that the uptake has been actually not very fast either. So, you know, it has been announced in May, but even, you know, as of August, there were some 33% of the funds had been disbursed out of the 3 lakh crores. And now it is maybe 2 lakh crores out of 3 lakh crores has been disbursed. Okay. So it's still not the complete fund has still not been disbursed. Although it has been a very hard period for most MSMEs. Okay. A lot of micro and small businesses have faced very hard times, but the offtake on the credit is not that high. You would have expected that the 3 lakh crores would be exhausted by now. But that's not actually the case. So it makes me think that either, you know, it is not going to those firms that truly need it. So that there are firms that are able to borrow, but they're not strictly in need of it so much. That's one possibility. It's not going where it's really needed. Secondly, there's a small technical point also, which is that the amount that you are allowed to borrow was 20% of your outstanding loans as on February 29th. Right? So that's not maybe for some reason you didn't have too many loans on February 29th. Right? So then you're not going to be able to borrow. So there's a kind of unnecessary restriction put there. So there could be various reasons like this. Now, as to what can be done, this is a very difficult question, and the main obstacle in our way to support enterprises in India, micro enterprises in India, is that the informality gets in the way, because most of them are unregistered, do not have relationship with foreign formal finance, the government does not know about them. It becomes difficult to target any policy to them. So very similar to households, right? Like if you wanted to help BPL households or in general, like poor households, what would you do? You know, you have Jandhan, so you can do some cash transfers to Jandhan. But many poor households don't have a Jandhan account. So how do you reach them with cash help? It's very difficult. Same thing with businesses. Most of the micro enterprises, which are like the mom and pop, 1%, 2%, 3%, 4% businesses, the government actually has hardly any mechanisms to ensure that help reaches them. What we can do, I think, given that this crisis is so huge and it is really forcing us to rethink so many things, is that we should now say, what do we have at our disposal? What are the widest things we have? So do we have street vendor licenses? Do we have GST registration? Do we have any other kind of municipal license that small businesses have to take or shops have to take? Do we have any ID cards that state governments have issued to various, you know, do we have health cards? All of these different welfare schemes have been issued. Now is the time to see, is there any way to rationalize all of this and say, I'm going to gather information using a variety of these systems and try to reach these people who are falling outside the net. It's not easy to do, and that's why we have not done it. But without that, the help is not going to reach the businesses that truly need the help.
So even before the pandemic struck and the lockdown also, India's GDP was slowing down. How do you think it has impacted MSMEs?
So the impact of the pandemic has been very severe, and we don't have good data right, you know, as of now, because it's very recent, so we don't have that good high frequency data on enterprises in India. Most of the data comes from the formal sector, so we don't really know what is happening in the informal sector on a good real time basis. But by most reports that are coming out in the media, as well as some surveys that have been done by various industry organizations, it seems clear that the micro enterprises definitely have suffered a lot. 50-60% of them have reported problems meeting payments, have said that they might have to shut down. The numbers are quite alarming. There's also simultaneously, because a lot of industries like transport and tourism and hospitality have completely been wiped out. Many people from there have come into retail and so on. So suddenly there's a lot of people you'll find who are doing vegetable vending, setting up shops and so forth, which again means that incomes in that sector are going to go even further down because more competition is coming in there. So a large number of businesses have shut down, or they've had to sell their assets or borrow from informal sources because they can't get formal funding. So and informal sources means high rates of interest. So coming few years, they are going to have to be saddled. They are going to be saddled with this debt at a very high rate of interest. And that means that it is going to affect their future output also. So we are going to see fairly strong, I think, supply side problems come out of this crisis, by which I mean that our output will suffer because businesses will have gone bankrupt or their productive capacity will be hampered in the months and years to come.
You talked about the challenges that the MSMEs face, right? So one of the major challenges like MSMEs face is that the consumer demand has declined sharply during the lockdown. And on the other hand, they are facing one more challenge from the big online forums like Amazon, Flipkart. They're giving heavy discounts and home delivery options. So how does the future look like for MSMEs in this competitive market? And what do you suggest to balance that?
Yeah, so that question actually raises also another important point that we should talk about, which is that the sectoral experiences are very different, right? So which sector are you talking about when you talk, which MSMEs are you talking about? So there are MSMEs in various manufacturing industries. There are MSMEs in retail, what you mentioned. There are even MSMEs in health and transportation. You know, all of these sectors have a lot of MSMEs. So the strategy for promotion of this sector also has to have a sectoral lens to it. So the problem that you mentioned with Amazon, Flipkart, other kind of big players like this is particularly a problem of the retail sector. And retail is one of the largest sectors as far as MSMEs go. So if MSMEs in the retail sector suffer as a result of this competition, then that has very large impacts on employment. So we definitely need to have a good policy to ensure that that doesn't happen. Now, I don't really have, I have not really studied this in the retail particularly sector in any detail to have good policy solutions here. What we have tried to do in the past, which is try to protect some of this retail market, not allow foreign players to come fully, etc., that could be tried for a while in the transition period. But it's not a permanent solution. The problem here is that the lack of good job and employment opportunities in other parts of the economy make retail the default sector for micro entrepreneurs. What is actually happening is that these are all people who are not finding work elsewhere. And so they would set up a shop somewhere, do a cart, sell some clothes on the footpath, or all of these kinds of things that we see, right? Vegetable vendors, footwear vendors, clothes vendors, all of these. If the economy creates adequate number of job opportunities, then there will be fewer people kind of collecting in the retail sector as a surplus sector. So without that long-term perspective, there's no way that we can actually solve this problem. We are not going to have viable businesses in retail at this scale, you know, like one person, two people, three people, not going to happen. So that's the thing as far as retail is concerned. As far as manufacturing and agriculture are concerned, actually, there may be some of these larger players may have potential benefits for the MSMEs if you are able to secure a linkage. Many of these digital platforms, what they are doing is they are creating linkages between the market and the MSMEs. If you think of Swiggy or even Airbnb, many of these kinds of new models do that. So there is actually an opportunity for the MSMEs to find new markets through the digital platforms, which is not the case for retail. So there are these two kind of broad distinctions I would make. One small point I will add that the real policy focus on MSMEs has to be on, particularly on the micro end, not on the small and medium so much, but more on the micro end, how to scale up so that they don't remain so small, which makes it very difficult for them to compete because they have no economies of scale. Right? They have very little surplus. They can't invest in machinery and technology. As I said, most of them would have one or two workers and so on. So how to increase that scale of business is a very important policy challenge that we need to address.
Also in September, the new Industrial Relations Code bill was introduced by the Labour and Employment Minister. So what was the need to bring this law and how do you think it is going to impact the workforce working for MSMEs?
Yeah, this is a real difficult question because there's a long history to the labor law reform in India and it is closely connected to the MSME sector because not the micro, but the small and medium. Here's where the distinction becomes important because most of the small and medium enterprises have more than 20 workers, right? While most of the micro have less than 20, perhaps even less than 10. So they don't fall under most of the labor laws. Most of the labor laws don't apply to the micro enterprises. The labor law reform has to do with the small and medium enterprises, how to make it easier for them to grow by reducing the burden of compliance on them. Okay? So this whole debate over rationalization of the laws, reducing the number of laws into four codes, etc. The logic there is that as an entrepreneur, who let's say I have a medium enterprise, medium scale enterprise, I employ maybe 70, 80 people or something like that. I want to expand my business, but when I cross over the threshold from 100 workers, I have to be burdened with a lot of new labor law compliances, right? And that disincentivizes me to grow. That is the logic. So if I remove some of those obstacles, then the growth will happen. Okay. Now there are some problems with this view, which many people have pointed out, which is that the laws are not the only thing that prevents firms from growing. Okay? Many other problems are also the infrastructure, demand, credit, and so forth. Assuming all of that works, maybe the labor laws become a problem because I have to comply with too many rules. So can the government make my life easier by reducing the number of rules that I have to comply with? So that is the context for these laws. If things actually work as planned, then it's possible that the simpler codes and specifically the raising of the thresholds for hiring and firing and so on from 100 to 300, which is one of the changes that have been brought, may enable growth of firms. Now, but we have to remember that most of these threshold changes actually have been tried before in various states. So it's not like we don't know what happens. Right? Rajasthan has tried it. UP has tried it. Many other states have tried to increase the thresholds, but that has not really enabled job creation that much. But as I said, job creation depends on many factors, not just this. Specifically, the IR code that you referred to, I want to draw one attention to this one point of the code, which is the fixed term employment aspect. So what they have done is they have made fixed term employment, allowable in firms, provided that the fixed-term employee who is hired for, let's say, 1 year or 3 years or whatever, gets the same salaries and benefits as a permanent employee gets. Okay, then you can hire fixed term. And it's supposed to make it easier for you to hire, because after 3 years, you can let them go or you can renew them. It's up to you. You know, it's not a permanent worker. The problem is that they have done nothing to touch the contractual system, which is right now how people do the thing, right? Right now, if I want to have fixed term employees, I'll go through contractors. But the contractor system is not touched. So there is no incentive for the firm to actually hire a fixed term employee at the same salary and benefits as permanent, because I can hire a fixed term employee through a contractor at a lower salary and with no benefits. So unless I prevent that from happening, this reform doesn't actually have much teeth to it. In fact, what it will do is it will convert permanent into fixed term. So it will have the opposite effect. Contract system will continue, but the permanent workers now can be replaced by fixed term workers. So it's reducing the amount of job security and increasing casualization in the economy, which may be good for firms, but it's not really good for workers.
Could you also tell me what kind of policy interventions are required by the central government at this juncture?
One, government policy has to look at micro enterprises separately from MSMEs, because their problems are very distinct. They're mostly informal. Two, the liquidity-based solutions can work for firms that are already in the liquidity net. They're already in the credit system. They are good, you know, functioning well. Only problem they have is this pandemic-induced shock. If they're informal firms, they're not in the formal net of finance, liquidity-based solutions will not work for them. We have to try something different, like a direct fiscal mechanism. Give them direct income support, just like Jan Dhan. But think of it as Jan Dhan for enterprises and not for households. Right? In fact, at this level, there's no distinction between households and enterprises. Most of them are the same. Right? You have your home business, basically. So that's the second big point. And the third big point is, going forward, scaling up of very small firms is really key. Otherwise, we'll keep finding ourselves in the same situation where any shock happens, and these tiny firms instantly are in a crisis because they have no buffer and no power to last a crisis.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Indian Economy Explained. You can subscribe to the Suno India Show on Apple iTunes, Google Podcasts, JioSaavn, or any other podcasting app of your choice. Thank you.